They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, listeners and devoted audience, devoted fans. This is Magellan's at the Movies, as always. I'm one half of the titular Magellan's, Nathan Mogliines. I'm joined, as always, by the other half, my better half, Elliot Mogliines. Elliot, we are heading into the summer blockbuster season. So already some of the big movies are getting trailers, they're getting promotions, things are ramping up for these things. Elliot, what are the movies from this summer that you are looking forward to? I mean, we've got obviously two of the biggest superhero movies of the year in Superman and the Fantastic Four. We've got another Mission Impossible movie, and you've already stated that you're a big Mission Impossible fan. Is there something else more under the radar that you're excited for this summer? Or do you think this summer is just going to be a wash in terms of blockbusters and big movies?
Well, I'm not sure if a summer only has blockbusters and big movies, I think that might already be a wash. Honestly, I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of Mission Impossible. I am excited for the last installment. I'm interested in Superman and 28 years later, and I think that's it. I'm not sure. What else is coming out?
That's a really good question. If we were better prepared, we would have looked up like a complete list of stuff. I mean, Final Destination is getting a new movie that is
the very idea, the raison d'etre of the Final Destination series is anathema to me.
Interesting.
Wow, The Final Reckoning has an 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's very low for a Mission Impossible movie.
I was seeing in pre-reviews that it's, like, not great, that it's kind of a mess.
Dang, that
Which
sucks.
That's my sense, too, that, like, production has kind of been a nightmare, and the movie is way over budget because they just... they didn't make up as much money as they thought they would from the first part, and so they were kind of trying to retool the second part to get more money, and I don't think it's worked, personally. I don't think it looks like it's worked, review-wise.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, yeah, there's not a whole lot else on this list. I guess I'm kind of interested in Ballerina.
Hmm.
The Phoenician Scam, no thank you. Scheme, excuse me, Freudian
Good
slip
grief.
There.
Good grief.
The Life of Chuck? I don't know.
Mike Flanagan, once again, making a Stephen King adaptation, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good.
Elio, the trailer looked good. I would say it looks okay. Like, there will be movies that I'll be going to the theater for, and obviously most of the movies that I see in theaters are movies that I have only heard about in like the week or so preceding my decision to go see them.
Yeah. Interesting.
So what do you think, Nathan? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to The Phoenician Scheme, obviously. I mean, Wes Anderson is undisputedly the most talented and exciting director currently working. I mean, there's no contest here. Who are you going to put him up against?
Nolan?
Nolan's good, but he's old hat, okay? Wes Anderson is pushing every envelope possible.
What are you talking about?
I'm being a tad facetious. Although I think, you know, Wes Anderson and Christopher Nolan, these are the two directors that in my mind I'm most excited to see what they do next, because I feel like they've done such an amazing job of, for the most part, innovating in what they do in a way that's really fun for me to, like, see. I think Wes Anderson keeps taking bigger swings narratively, and I think he keeps, you know, inconceivably coming up with new ways to push his style to the limit. Christopher Nolan, kind of a similar thing, that he keeps finding novel ways to make giant, exciting blockbusters that people are excited to go to about fairly... You know, I'm not going to say act like The Odyssey is a super niche, artsy sort of thing to make a movie about, but it's not, you know, it's not Batman. He's making stuff that's a little more out there. But anyway, The Venetian Scheme, I'm excited for. I'm kind of excited for the Fantastic Four movie, just to go and see if it's any good. I don't know if you've been seeing these articles where Kevin Feige is doing, like, MCU damage control, where he's like, hey guys, our new commitment is to quality over quantity. And everyone's like, dude, you're telling on yourself. That the commitment the last couple years has evidently been, let's produce a bunch of slop for these people and not, let's make a good, artful piece of media. So I'm excited for Fantastic Four. I'm also very excited. This is a movie that's coming out in just a couple of weeks, but the Tim Robinson movie, Friendship, I'm very excited for this movie. I am a huge fan of I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. It's a sketch series. If you've never watched it, you should at least try it out, because if you find it funny, then it's like three seasons of, you'll find all of it funny. If you find the first episode funny, you're going to find the whole thing pretty funny. And I am so excited for this movie. It looks fascinating, and I'm really pumped for it. I think those are the two big ones that I'm excited for, and they're both coming up here pretty soon. So I'm in for an exciting couple of weeks, personally.
So I can't remember if we've talked about this or not. Are you planning on seeing Superman?
It kind of depends on reviews. I mean, well, and also I'll say this. If anyone around me invites me to a movie, unless I know I'm going to hate the movie, I'll go to the movie, right? I like going to the movie theater, even if it's a bad movie. The experience of seeing a film in theaters is something that I really enjoy, even if it's a mediocre movie. So, like, if my wife says, hey, do you want to go see Superman? I'll probably go see Superman. I mean, you know, I don't like speaking in definitives. I like leaving myself some wiggle room in every situation.
Absolutely. If the Lord wills it, let your yes exactly. be yes and your no, no.
Exactly. Yes. But I think it's going to depend on reviews whether or not I'm the person saying, like, hey, we should go to the Superman movie. The newest trailer came out. It looks decent. I don't know. James Gunn has been a bit of a mixed bag for me the past couple of films that he's made. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, this is Warner Brothers Hail Mary here. Like, they need this movie to not be decent or good. They need it to be the movie event of the summer, or else, I don't know. Maybe they'll give up and they'll stop making DC movies, which I would be fine with. I'm not saying that I want Superman to fail, because obviously I want it to succeed. I want every movie to succeed.
Yeah.
Mostly. But I'm just saying that if that capital was going towards other productions, I wouldn't be right mourning the loss.
Well, it's not like Warner Brothers has been putting its money into great things recently.
It's because it's all tied up in DC movies.
No, that's not why.
No, yeah, you're right. That's not true. One more thing I wanted to mention is that in terms of re-releases, movies coming back to theaters this summer for its 30th anniversary, The Last Crusade is back in theaters on the weekend of the 15th. And brother, I am going to be there.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, great film. Great film. I believe it made our top 10 movies of the 80s. If you haven't listened to that episode, we go through, create a list. So be sure to check that out, as always. Anyway, yeah, so send us an email. Is there a summer movie that you're really looking forward to that you'd love to hear? If we're looking forward to it, you know, send us an email. Some people have already sent us an email. If you're afraid of being the first, I have good news for you. You would not be, because today we are covering another fan request. Someone has emailed us and requested Murder on the Orient Express, the recent Kenneth Branagh version of the Agatha.
Is that how you pronounce his name?
Oh, that's a good question. Kenneth Branagh?
I thought it was pronounced Branagh. Or Branagh.
Oh, it could. He's Irish, right? So
yeah.
I saw Belfast. Let me just flex real quick. I did see it.
We saw that one together.
We did, yeah. Jamie Dornan does a fantastic job in that movie. Fun fact. He's really good. Yeah, I actually like that. That was one of the Oscar that we're getting sidetracked here, but that was one of those movies that gets like nominated for an Oscar and then just kind of gets completely swept under the rug. Which I thought was kind of harsh. I thought it was really, really good. I mean, it wasn't like my favorite movie of the year, because I'm pretty sure that was the same year as like, oh shoot, what won that? I think Everything Everywhere All at Once maybe won that year. Or
oh, yay. So
which was better. Yeah, which was another movie that I didn't love, but I really liked Belfast. Anyway, Kenneth Branagh, or however you pronounce his last
name.
Ken, yeah. Has, I would say, made his living adapting classic British novels or classic novels in general. He's probably most well known for his adaptations of, you know, Shakespeare's works. He's done a version of Frankenstein that was really popular. He also directed Thor, which is, you know, kind of based on a classic novel in a sense. Yeah, fun fact, in case you didn't remember that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he only directed the first Thor, but yeah, he did direct one. And here he's tackling Agatha Christie, the classic whodunit author and her classic series of whodunits.
The most successful, best-selling fiction author in human history.
Yes, yeah. She's her novels have done really well. I've never read an Agatha Christie novel, although I will say this movie did kind of make me want to read one. Not to spoil too much of my thoughts here, but this is the movie that we're tackling. I would say this was a reasonably successful film. It spawned two sequels, two more adaptations of Agatha Christie novels, and Hercule Poirot. Gosh, this episode is just gonna, I feel like a reoccurring theme in this podcast is us not being able to mispronounce difficult names, which is ironic.
Well, I mean, it is French, and yeah, the key to the French language is they like to cram as many letters as possible into a word and then pronounce like two of them.
Yeah, it's tough. But anyway, it's about a classic detective. Let's start this review. Elliot, what are your first thoughts? Have you read these books? Have you seen these movies before? Let's get this started.
No, I'm like you. I have not read anything by Agatha Christie. Makes you wonder how she's so popular or successful.
Yeah.
But I guess she's had a long time to be successful and popular.
Yeah.
But I am interested in Agatha Christie. I have seen another adaptation of this source material. I watched Sidney Lumet's adaptation.
Yeah.
So I knew everything that was going to happen, more or less. And yeah, this has never been a movie that I was that interested in. I'm not the biggest fan of whodunits. I like mysteries and detective stories, but whodunits where the audience is expected to take a much more active role in trying to figure out who the killer is. Like, it's whodunits are kind of a race between the audience and the detective on screen. And I don't know. I guess I'm just not up for that. I don't like engaging with movies. I like to be spoon-fed everything.
Wow, that checks out, given the movies you've disliked in the past.
Yeah, whatever. I was just being self-deprecating, but
yeah, but you're I just had being to insult mean. You, yeah.
And I thought this movie was okay. I liked it. I liked parts of it, I should say. Hmm. There's definitely stuff that I didn't like about it, but on the whole, I would say that I was entertained. There was never a point where I was sad or irritated, and when it ended, I was like, yeah, all right, and I went about my day none the worse for wear, but not particularly better for wear.
Interesting. I think I'm maybe in a slightly more positive place than you. I was kind of surprised by how much I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was really neat stylistically, and then I think the story itself kind of drew me in as well. That I agree with you. Yeah, the classic whodunit formula is mostly based around predicting who the killer is, figuring out the clues faster than the on-screen detective, and just kind of working your way through the case as the detective is working their way through the case. So I really enjoyed how much this movie had other things on its mind than just how can we show the audience a very convincing crime story, and how can we get the audience tangled up in questions of who did it. I was surprised by how much this movie was obsessed with also the question of, you know, why the killers did it. Obviously, eventually we're going to be talking about spoilers here, so if you've been avoiding spoilers to this classic whodunit since, you know, 100-some years since it's been released, there are going to be spoilers eventually, but I thought it was really interesting how much the movie was also about, you know, the values that Poirot had and how he kind of interacted with seeing some of those values being challenged in this case. It almost reminded me of, like, Seven or Zodiac in terms of it not a mystery thriller, not just being about, oh, who did this, but a deeper question of, like, why did they do it? What does it say philosophically about people and psychologically about people that, right, this thing has happened? And I thought that was really interesting. It's not, I would not say that this movie is on the same level as Seven in terms of investigating those ideas. It is, I think, primarily concerned with being a whodunit, but I was kind of pleasantly surprised to see these other ideas and themes to be present in the movie, because I knew who did it before I started the movie, and so I was kind of expecting to be bored by the mystery, given the fact that I already know the twist. So finding this other fun little thematic thread to be following, I really enjoyed it. So that's kind of my first thoughts on it.
Well, that's not good.
Oh, no.
Because I feel about the exact opposite about pretty much everything you just said.
Dang it.
But go ahead and choose a place to start. Where would you like to start?
Well, I think, you know, let's start with kind of the main character, right? That we are introduced to this detective. Like all great literary detectives, Hercule is an absolute mess of idiosyncrasies and, like, little character quirks that he explains to one character very early on, that he feels that everything in the world has a proper place to be, a proper way that it should be. And so it's always painfully obvious to him when something is amiss in this. And throughout the movie, he's explaining to other characters and other people that, you know, he feels a certain way about people, and he believes in their rationality and their kind of inherent goodness in some sense. And so he is, you know, that's kind of part of the reason why he does detective work, is because he's enjoys being able to find these kind of outliers in the human experience and then, right, put them in jail and make society better for everyone. And so I thought Kenneth Branagh, who plays the main character, I thought he did a really good job, and I thought he certainly represented an enjoyable character to spend this time. If I think of the whodunits that I enjoy the most, if you think of the classic ones, like, you know, Sherlock Holmes, most of the Sherlock Holmes movies I've seen, Sherlock Holmes is a ton of fun to be around. It's fun to see him find these ludicrous clues. If you think of Knives Out, Benoit Blanc is another frustrating to pronounce French name for a very Southern person, weirdly enough. But he's another really great detective to spend time with and watch them try to figure things out. So I thought Hercule was another example of that kind of trope. So I really enjoyed him and spending time with him as he was solving the mystery.
Well, I think Poirot was okay. Mm. And it's hard because he is so central to this movie and everything that's happening in it. It's hard to talk just about him and not other things that I liked or disliked about the movie. I think that Ken did a pretty good job. I have honestly never been, like, blown away by him as an actor. I guess I just haven't seen the right film of his. But I've never thought that he was bad, and he's not bad here. He does fine. I think that his character and his character arc is very threadbare, because what Nathan means when he says that there's a thematic presence in this movie is that Poirot mentions twice that he doesn't think anyone should be killed, and then at the end of the movie he changes his mind, which I do not find sufficient. It reminds me a lot of, in a lot of classical art, if you want to make a painting about something, you kind of just put it in. So, like, if you put a skull in your painting, then your painting is about death. If you put farm tools in your painting can be said to be about labor or the land and stuff like that. And that's the kind of approach that I don't like in narratives, because it's never actually engaged with. It is present on a purely superficial level, where Poirot says, we can't just kill people. There's lots of people that the world could do better without, I think is what he says.
Yeah.
But there's never, there's never really a sense that he's grappling with that, or that this is causing him to change, or that he's reconsidering it. So at the end, when he gets the people together, and spoilers, his final spoiler warning, just giving everyone time to leave. Everyone on the train did it. That's the spoil. That's the twist. It's pretty good as far twist goes. That's not bad at all. But that is the first and only time where his worldview is challenged. So the first time it's challenged is the time when it changes. And I just found that very unsatisfying.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I certainly found the resolution of these themes to be a little lacking, because it does feel like, yeah, like you said, it does feel like Poirot is espousing these beliefs all the way up to until the 11th hour. Like, so at the end, when he decides to let the killers go, because in his mind, to punish them for what they had already gone through would be unnecessary. That he doesn't believe anymore, at least, that someone being driven to kill is necessarily an aberration, or at least is like evidence of an aberration, that a person could kill someone and not necessarily be a killer, which, I don't know, I think like Batman would take issue with this. But I agree with you that, yeah, he flips on this seemingly at the end, and it doesn't really feel as though he's received a lot of pushback. You can look at the times like his conversations with Daisy Ridley's character seem definitely like she's kind of pushing up against some of what he believes, and but it doesn't really feel like he's wrestling with it for a ton of the movie. And certainly it's not as if the movie is giving us a lot of meat to chew on, right? This is not like The Dark Knight, where we have different characters like verbalizing different philosophies that we can see the main character is wrestling with or debating between, right? Like, Bruce Wayne in The Dark Knight is clearly wrestling with the problems that the Joker represents and the different viewpoints that that other characters communicate to him in terms of how to catch the Joker or how to beat the Joker. And his actions very clearly show, right, a changing of beliefs as the movie progresses, as well as a reaffirming of the beliefs that he had at the beginning of the movie. Whereas in this film, I agree, Hercule is mostly just espousing beliefs throughout the film. He's telling people, like, hey, I'm not going to do this, or I'm going to do this, and this is something I believe about the world. And then at the end of the movie, he kind of changes those. And so this is one of the things that kind of makes me want to read the book, because this is the sort of thing that's tough to translate from book to movie, right? If a character is spending a lot of time in internal monologues debating beliefs and philosophies in their mind, outside of narration, there's not a lot of great ways to translate that to a film. So it kind of makes me want to read the book, because I wonder if the book doesn't have more of this just by nature of being a book, and therefore allowing us to have a window into the thoughts of the main character. So I agree with you, it's a little substandard, although in general, you might have noticed this over the course of this podcast, I'm a little more willing to give movies points for the attempt and being like, yeah, I'm glad that this is here. Like, it's not just subtracting from my enjoyment that there's a slightly shoddily put together theme here, because like I said, I went into this expecting only a whodunit, so the fact that it had anything at all beyond a whodunit to offer was a pleasant surprise to me.
Well, my position is always, if you're gonna do it shoddily, just don't do it. Like, just make it a straight-up whodunit, and I probably would have liked it a lot more. Hmm. Or more. I don't know about a lot more. Yeah, I don't know. This is just one of those areas where Nathan is very permissive when it comes to movies, and I'm not. And it's just a matter of taste.
It's so funny to me. The word I used was sympathetic, which is a word with, like, positive connotations. And the word that you choose to use is permissive, which is not a word that has many, like, positive connotations. I'm just saying, don't think you can sneak your subtle little microaggression digs at me, past me. I am so alert.
Here's what I find sympathetic. Poor people. The oppressed. Veterans. I don't find millionaire Hollywood writers and directors particularly sympathetic.
I'm not sympathetic towards them. I'm just sympathetic towards, you know, art in general as a concept.
Well, I'm sympathetic to it as a concept as well. I'm less sympathetic to shoddy execution.
Well, let's move on then.
That's what I was going to say.
To the other characters in the movie. This has a large cast of A-list actors in a variety of side roles of various importances. So did any of these stick out to you as particularly good? Or, you know, what did you think about the supporting cast?
I didn't think that any of them particularly stuck out. But in this case, I would say that the ensemble is more than the sum of its parts. Because taken together, taken independently, actually, none of these characters are all that deep or interesting. But as an ensemble, I actually like them quite a bit. Because they're all, like with most ensembles, they're all painted with fairly broad strokes, which gives the actors, I feel, a lot of wiggle room to experiment, to go big, and to kind of turn things up to 11, which I enjoyed. I don't know why. I'm going to struggle even remembering his name. Marquez Vasquez?
Yeah.
I don't know. I am very confused as to why they did not just cut his character. Because he's got, like, 3 minutes of screen time, and he also has the weakest link to John Armstrong. Like, what? He got a loan from Armstrong or something?
Yeah.
So he was really the only sour note in the ensemble. Through no fault of the actor, I was just like, dude, just get rid of the character if he's not going to do anything. But the ensemble, I like the ensemble. I really liked the doctor. I always love a good, principled, upright man of action like that.
Mm-hmm.
Willem Dafoe, he is bringing more talent to this movie than he needs to. Like, the scene at the end when he's talking about, he had a brief fling, or not a fling, he had a romance with, a woman who was one of the victims of the Armstrong murder in a roundabout way. And he was just talking about, like, I told her she could do better, and me, old and gray, but she was there showing up on time and every day. And he looked so wistful and melancholy, and I was actually starting to feel it. And I was like, dude, Willem, why are you trying so hard? But I appreciated it. So yeah, I thought that I liked the ensemble. And I liked their simplicity and their, in parts, ostentatiousness.
Yeah, I'd agree with everything you said. I would shout out Daisy Ridley. I thought she did a really great job she is probably one of the meatier side character roles, just in terms of she gets a bit more screen time than the other ones. But yeah, I'd agree with everything else you said. I like the supporting cast. I think they're very good together, but there are more than a few of them. I mean, beyond just Marquez, the Count and his, like, ballerina wife or whatever are another character who basically just get, like, one scene and then the final scene where it's revealed their connection to the Armstrongs. And I'm assuming that this is just a timing sort of issue, that in the book they show up more or they're more relevant. I will also say I'm learning Russian, so I did, like, 20 seconds before Hercule pointed it out, I did say that I was like, well, if they're Russian, H in Russian makes an N sound. It's like an N is how I know this, especially because my own name in Russian would use obviously the H character, what looks like the H character. I haven't figured out the actual names of the characters yet in Russian. I'm still working on it. But yeah, I thought everyone did a pretty good job. There's just some of the people who kind of fall through the cracks just by nature of there's like, I don't know, 12 some characters involved in the final thing, and it's only a 2-hour movie, and it takes like an hour for the movie to get to the murder, so there's only so much time to spend with all of these other characters, so it's a good supporting cast. It just maybe needed a slightly longer movie. And this is, Ken could do it. He's the guy who made a like 4.5-hour long adaptation of Hamlet that doesn't cut a single line from Shakespeare's play, which is a crazy amount of time to spend with Shakespeare, but you know, he's supposed to be good or whatever.
If they're not cutting anything, wouldn't that be a normal amount of time to spend with Shakespeare?
I mean, I guess. I don't, the other adaptations of Hamlet typically cut a lot, so.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the mystery aspect of this movie. Because this is an area where I personally thought it was a bit of a mixed bag. And for me, I like mysteries, or the movies with mysteries in them, where it's hard to describe, where the audience has a fighting chance of figuring stuff out alongside just like going on the journey with the protagonist, which I think that this movie kind of does and doesn't do in different areas. Like sometimes Poirot will announce that he's figured something out, like on his own, in his own head. And in those moments, I was like, well, that's lame. Like when he detects Willem Dafoe's front as being a front, being a former policeman, because of the type of gun that he was using. I'm like, there's no way for an audience member to figure that out. So those types of revelations, I feel very cold to, or I am left cold by, because they're kind of just, I mean, it's the ultimate form of telling and not showing, right? Whereas, when Poirot deducts that the doctor is not a killer, because the doctor shoots Poirot in the shoulder, and before this, the doctor had said that, in the war, he had been a sharpshooter. And so stuff like that, my reaction is like, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Rather than just being like, oh, yeah, well, I guess if you say so. So sometimes it's more of an engaging process, and sometimes it's more a process where you're just kind of, I mean, like, honestly, Poirot could be lying. Like, that gun could have nothing to do with policemen, and I would have no way of knowing. But the thing about a sharpshooter missing or not being able to hit someone at point-blank range, that is something that it's just more fun to those kinds of things, to see the deductions happen in real time, and to know that you could have thought of that as well. I don't know. I'm starting to ramble. So,
well, I think you're kind of right. I mean, it's always fun to be able to, like you said, whodunits typically ask the audience to be very engaged because you're trying to pick up clues. I mean, one of the clues that I picked up was obviously when the night of the murder, when the conductor knocks on Ratchet's door and asks him a question, and Ratchet ostensibly replies in French. And then the next day, when Poirot is interviewing people, Josh Gad's character says how he doesn't know any other languages, right? That's something that we as an audience, if we're paying attention, we can say, oh my goodness, then that means Ratchet was not, like, someone else was in there at the time when the conductor knocked on it, on the door, and, right, so we can build a case for ourselves. And it's always kind of frustrating, yeah, when it turns out, actually, you couldn't have built a case by yourself. Like, the movie withheld information or contained information that you had no way of knowing. But it's hard because we also, right, Hercule is supposed to be a super genius detective, like, with ultra detecting skills. So you don't necessarily want them to be outsmarted by the audience. They should know things that we as the audience go like, oh, that's so clever, of course. He's using the wrong gun. That's so smart.
That's just like random trivia knowledge. That's not smart. I mean, that's,
well,
I don't know. I guess
as someone who knows, yeah. So it's not really a negative for me so much. I do think the mystery, and a part of it is, like we already said, the twist is great. It's a very good twist. Especially when all whodunits, like a classic staple of the whodunit, is the red herring, where it's like, oh, this person seems like the killer. So making everyone seem like the killer just, right, to the viewer seems like, wow, there's sure are a lot of red herrings here, when the obvious answer is maybe they all did it. It does get, I guess, a little frustrating. Like you said, some of the connections to the Armstrong case get increasingly tenuous. But I think overall, I enjoyed the mystery. Even knowing the twist, I still had a fun time watching Hercule put together all of the different pieces of it.
Well, I didn't. Again, it's not a negative, it's just a mixed thing for me.
Yeah.
That I just wish it was better, which is what I would apply to a lot of this movie. That I'm like, it's a mixed bag, and I just wish it was better.
Yeah. I think some other notes that I have in terms of the technical kind of aspects of the movie, I liked how much I got the sense from this movie of almost being like a play, that there was just a very stage or stylistic sort of element to the film that I thought was really fun and very, like, much lent itself to this type of story. If you think about stuff like Hercule's ridiculous mustache, if you think of how many times the movie had kind of a long take of characters discussing things or had just a very good sense of timing of characters' lines and these sorts of things. I thought it was really fun. There's some parts of the movie where that kind of falls apart. Every time they did a CGI, like, outside shot of the train, I was like, dude, you couldn't have found a train to shoot with, like, a real camera, or just, like, spent more than $10 on making this CGI train, because it doesn't look great, which is always frustrating. But I liked that kind of stylistic aspect to it that made it feel like, I don't know, like a BBC recording of a stage play, almost, while still being very, there was some very neat cinematic sort of sections. Again, I always love long takes, oneers of characters moving through busy environs. Those are always fun to watch. I liked the overhead shots of Hercule doing some detecting. I just thought stuff like that was neat.
I actually wasn't a fan of the overhead of the God's eye shots.
What a huge surprise. Elliot was not a fan.
The shots of there were a few times where the camera I felt was just distracting. Like it was taking me out of the movie because it was such a movie like constructed shot that I was like, just stop, all right? We don't need this right now. The other example I thought of is there's a shot of Poirot and Daisy Ridley's character, I can't remember her name, sitting and having a conversation, and it starts like way low, a really low angle shot, and then goes up and ends up at an extremely high angle. And it's basically just an establishing shot for this conversation. So I was like, why are you doing this? Just do something normal. Or if you're going to do something cool, do something cool. This just feels like random camera movements for the sake of camera movements. Mm. But on the whole, I think that the movie was well shot in general. And I agree that CGI was off. I've got a few other things. I liked the scenes of gathering clues, right? I liked Poirot's meticulousness and his funny accent and his funny mustache. I think that the more action-y moments were less interesting. The doctor, when he shoots Poirot, they get into a fight, and a young, fit veteran of a world war having fisticuffs with a middle-aged detective is just not all that interesting. And same thing with this. There's this chase at one point, and Poirot is an older man, so he can't really run that fast. So the chase is pretty tepid. And those are just moments where I don't know why we need that. They feel very obligatory of things have been slow for a while now. We gotta get some action in here. Let's have Kenneth Branagh get into a brawl with someone half his age and twice his size.
I mean, detective movies have, I'm thinking of the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies that I think do a very similar thing where they try to make action sequences and they try to think of okay, how would someone who's really smart fight? And so we get that great scene where he's predicting what the opponent will do before he does it or whatever. And early in this movie, right, we kind of have something like that when Hercule sets up this whole, he sticks his cane in the wall knowing that the culprit is going to run.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're supposed to put stuff into the wall, yeah, by the way.
Well, all of those people, the rabbi didn't stop him. You know, it was in pursuit of justice, Elliot. I don't know about that. But anyway, so it was kind of surprising, that the other two action sequences that you just mentioned didn't really rely on the intellect of the main character and instead did rely on, him outrunning a young guy or outfighting a young guy. Seems like it would have been better if he had, as well as his initial escape from the doctor. I thought he was just planning oh, I'll throw this dust in his eye. But right as he throws the dust in his eye, the workers hit something from out from under the train. And so the train rocks. And I was like, did he know? Is the movie implying that he knew that right at that moment the train was going to rock and so he'd have a chance? That's crazy. But that's really the only time in that fight where it seemed like his intellect was being used to get the upper hand on his opponent. And again, in a way that I found unbelievable. There's no way he knew the timing of that.
Well, I think in terms of the differences between Poirot at the start and Poirot for the rest of the movie, I think that in general, the first 30 minutes of this movie have a much more lighthearted and whimsical tone than the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, sticking a cane in the weeping wall is weird. But, like, having the guy that he's stopping run into the cane and do a complete, like, 360 flip in the air because of it, that's a very exaggerated reality type of thing to happen. And that just doesn't happen for the rest of the movie. Which I think goes some way to explaining at least a bit of the just, like, malaise that I started to feel towards the end of the movie. Mm. That the introduction set me up for a much different movie than ended up happening. And I would have preferred that we'd just gone one way or the other. Like, either we do it a little bit more dour and serious, or we do it a little bit more whimsical and fun. And frankly, I would have preferred the whimsical and fun option, because I think that Poirot as a character and all of these characters are exaggerated and very, very much not realistic. So having the more serious, like, centering it around a serious crime of a man kidnapping and murdering a child is just a little bit much, man. For the types of characters that we're interacting with. So there's just, in general, a bit of tonal disjointedness going on.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I didn't really feel that way, personally, but I could see why you would.
Wow, speaking of microaggressions.
I can see how some morons might have that opinion.
Of course.
No, genuinely, I can see why you would think, why you would feel that way. It just doesn't bug me. Which I don't know if that's a good thing. There's a lot of things in movies that I'm like, maybe I should be more critical of this aspect of the movie. And I'm like, it's whatever. Anyway, did you have any other closing sort of thoughts or things to say? Because I'm ready to get to the ratings.
I don't think so. I like the music, all right.
Yeah, the music's
it's not
okay.
Something that I would listen to casually, but it was pleasant. And I like it when movies have, like, themes and motifs. Very often I find that music in movies is just kind of formless, which I don't like. So I enjoyed that it had a bit of it had a bit more structure. I really liked the shots, the establishing shots that I did like, the one in the train station where the camera is just, like, weaving in and out of the crowd, introducing us to all these characters. Thought that was great. I really liked the shot outside of the train of Poirot and the woman who we would eventually learn is Sonia's mother just walking through the train. I really like that. I really like when movies take the time to show you their environments. Like, The Thing does this very well, of showing us where rooms are, how they connect to each other, so you have a really good sense of place. And obviously, it's pretty easy to do that on a train, because it only goes one direction, and all of the rooms are basically connected to each other. But still, I appreciated it.
All right. Yeah, I agree with all that. So I think for me personally, this movie is a classic 7 out of 10 movie. I think it is... it's above mediocre for sure. It has an engaging story. It's got some interesting ideas represented in it. I kind of wish they would go deeper, and there's a lot of different tiny problems that I have with this movie, but overall I had a good time with this movie. And I think if you're looking for a whodunit, you can do way worse than this movie. Way, way worse.
All right. I think this is a classic meh movie, where I think that it's broadly entertaining, but it's one of those movies where it's pretty superficial. And if you start to push on its various aspects, things will start to fall apart pretty quickly. I like Kenneth Branagh. I like all the actors and all the characters. It's just that they're going for an arc that, with Poirot, that they don't follow through on. And that's unfortunate. And the camera work sometimes gets in the way of a scene rather than enhances it. And that's a problem. For me, I should say. These are problems for me. But in general, I think that the camera work can be really good. The mystery solving aspects of it can be very engaging, and the music can be very pleasant. So I'm going to give it a C+, like just a bit above mediocre.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you once again to Cassidy for this request. Be sure to send us an email if you yourself have a request, have a movie that you would love to hear our thoughts on. Send us an email. If you have seen this movie, let's get to some recommendations. I'm going to go first. I'm going to pick the Robert Altman feature, Gosford Park. I think it's Gosford Park. This is a whodunit movie around a British castle. I was telling Elliot this beforehand, that this movie was originally written as kind of a dry run or pilot sort of idea for Downton Abbey. So if you've seen Downton Abbey, it's set in that sort of environment where it follows both the upper crust of society, the rich people, as well as the servants and the people underneath those, that upper crust. And yeah, this is just kind of a classic whodunit. I think if you watched Murder on the Orient Express, and like me, you felt that there was thematic elements that were a little undercooked or a little underbaked, I think Gosford Park is a perfect movie to go with, because it, I would say, very much does not undercook its thematic elements. It is very clearly trying to get at something slightly deeper than just, oh, who did it? It is trying to get at, why did they do it? What aspects of society have kind of set up people to feel like they need to do it? It, in this case, being murder. But it's a really great movie, good supporting cast, one really fantastic sequence in the middle where kind of similar to the sequence in Glass Onion, where it's just really noisy and there's lots of things happening and you're just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's another great example of that. So I don't see this movie talked about a ton, but I think if you're looking for another really good whodunit movie, I really think you should watch Gosford Park.
Interesting. I've never even heard of that movie.
That's weird, because I talked to you about it after I watched it. So you actually have, you just don't care about me.
Well, we talk about a lot of movies.
True. You're not wrong. So you're not wrong.
It's hard to keep track of them. So I guess, all right. Well, let's just move on. let's save this for our after episode argument that we have every time. My recommendation is going to be one of my favorite whodunits that isn't Scream. That's going to be The Fugitive. This is the movie adaptation of the TV show starring Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones. I chose this because I feel like The Fugitive is a great example of a movie where a mystery, where you are like right there with the character solving the mystery. Like everything that he does, that the main character does, makes sense, is properly contextualized, and you are right there with him trying to solve these clues, trying to bring it all together. And the times where he is ahead of you, it's not because the movie has kind of arbitrarily decided that he knows something. It's because he's just gotten ahead of you. Mm. So you do have those moments of like, oh, yes, of course, rather than just the like, oh, yeah, all right. Obviously, Harrison Ford is great in this movie. Tommy Lee Jones in here with some of the best one-liners I've ever seen in a movie. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. I don't care. Yeah. Search every outhouse, doghouse, hen house. I really like that. And just in general, it's a fun movie with a much more consistent tone than Murder on the Orient Express. Also, bonus recommendation, if you like this adaptation, you'll probably like Sidney Lumet's adaptation as well. So you can give that a look. But what you don't, you nobody needs a world-class detective to tell them that life is hard, full of disappointments. Okay. That's one of those things that everyone knows, no deduction required. It's just in there, in your head.
I was wondering where you were going with that. I was like, I know where he's trying to land. How's he gonna get there? But anyway, I still haven't seen The Fugitive. You've recommended it, I don't know how many times to me, and I keep not watching.
Are you sure?
It.
Didn't we watch it as a family?
Yeah, without me. I was not there.
Oh. Hmm.
I came home from whatever trip I was on, and everyone was like, oh my gosh, The Fugitive, so good. I love The Fugitive. And I was like, sure, guys, whatever you say, bro.
I think there may have been a time where I chose The Fugitive to review for the podcast and then changed my mind.
So that sounds right.
You've come close a few times.
Yeah. One of these days I'll get around to it. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you to Cassidy for sending in a recommendation. We love doing recommendations. I don't know if the people who recommend the movies love when we do them, because I feel like sometimes we're a little critical of them, but hopefully you enjoy hearing our discussion of it. We're going to be back next week, as always, with a brand new episode. We're going to be reviewing a film. Look forward to that. And we hope you have a great week.